Welcome to Peak Health, a radio show dedicated to empowering you to take back control of your health so that you can have the freedom to live the life that you want. I'm Lisa Morse, naturopathic physician on the island at Fern Cove Natural Medicine. I'm dedicated to helping you uncover the root cause of your symptoms so that you can get back on the road to feeling well again.
And I'm Claire Denise, certified health and wellness coach and a personal trainer. Our show is going to bring you information to help you take charge of your health. We're going to cover topics like IBS, heartburn, thyroid disorders, autoimmune diseases, osteoporosis, nutrition, and lots more.
Our first show today is dedicated to talking about the so-called secrets to vitality. It seems that we're constantly bombarded by media and salespeople about what is best for our health. It can honestly leave a person in a confused state with all the information that we're given.
Boy, I can totally agree with that. Are there actually secrets to vital health?
Well, you know, somewhat. We're going to talk about that today. Unfortunately, there's no magic pill for good health. But there are simple steps that can have a profound impact on the health of your body. And actually, if you're not well, it's difficult for your body to heal without them.
What do you mean by that?
Well, you can take all sorts of medications, supplements, remedies. But if your body is not getting supported by these simple steps, it's difficult for it to heal.
Oh, I get it. So you don't expect a pill to do all the work?
No. True. So this isn't to say that medications, surgery, conventional medicine, vitamins, supplements don't have a place in helping you be healthy. But the things that we're going to talk about, these are good for everybody, and they are so important for excellent health. And in addition, if you're sick, they can help the body to heal itself.
So, Lisa, I think what I've heard is that sometimes you have to help the body get ready to heal itself. Does that make sense?
Correct. Yeah. Conventional medicine teaches us that we need a doctor or medicine to heal our body, when in fact, the body can do the healing if it's given the right environment.
It's pretty interesting.
It is.
So I'm interested in what the secrets are. Are you going to tell me?
We are. We're going to talk about them. The first one I want to start off with is sleep. Sleep is essential for our bodies to heal. It's during the sleep that repair mechanisms take place. So people with adequate sleep have stronger immune systems, better weight control, better memory, and better mood. In addition, there's been studies that show inadequate sleep decreases the pain threshold in people, meaning that they experience more pain without proper amounts of sleep.
Okay, I've heard lots of variations on how much sleep people need. What do you take? What do you think? What's your take?
Yeah, everyone wants to know how much sleep to get. I would say the average amount needed is 8 hours, but varies for each person. People with chronic illnesses will need more, maybe 10 hours a night. It's important to figure out just how much you need.
So maybe this is crazy, but I've heard that the sleep you get before midnight is better than after midnight. So if you're a night owl, is that an issue?
It is. It's important. So the sleep before midnight has been found to be more restorative. So I recommend my patients get to bed before 10 p.m. or by 10 p.m., excuse me.
That means like fall asleep by that time?
Yeah. So be getting ready for bed, you know, maybe an hour before that. So preparing your body to be in a restful state.
Okay. Well, how would I know if I'm getting the right amount of sleep?
Well, if you're waking to an alarm clock, then you're likely not getting enough sleep. Otherwise, your body would be waking on its own if it had accumulated enough sleep. Another thing is if you fall asleep or if you doze in dark rooms, boring tasks, or on long drives, you're definitely sleep deprived.
Maybe some of that applies and some of it doesn't. So, so you're trying to get to bed by 10 p.m., trying to sleep for at least 8 hours. What are the benefits of this good sleep?
Well, one important one I want to mention is better weight control.
Yay!
Yeah, we all want that, right? When you don't get enough sleep, you have lower levels of leptin, which is a hormone that promotes satiety. And did you ever notice, Claire? I've noticed this, that if I don't get enough sleep, I feel really hungry the next day and I want to eat everything.
I'm not really sure. I can be hungry a lot of times.
Well, you must be getting enough sleep then. So
I think I do, actually.
Nice, nice. Good. So another benefit, less pain. When we don't get enough sleep, we're more sensitive to our pain. There's also, like I mentioned, the immune system. So adequate sleep increases the amount of a specific type of cell. These are called natural killer cells. And these are cells that keep our immune system strong. They help us fight viruses and even cancer, which I think is pretty amazing. So cancer is a disease of the immune system. And our body is designed to take care of cells that are replicating uncontrollably. Our immune system is needed to fight that. And actually, it's natural killer cells that do that. So it's important that we get enough sleep so that our natural killer cells are working properly.
Okay. This is starting to get into some stuff that's a little more, maybe lesser known. Mm-hmm. Better weight control, reducing pain, and a stronger immune system.
Right.
So what are some things you can do to have good sleep?
Okay, so do something relaxing before bedtime. So dim the lights, you know, maybe take a bath, do some journaling, read a book, avoid using computers, iPads, Kindles. These devices emit blue light that actually decreases the production of melatonin, which is a hormone that helps us sleep. So a couple hours before bedtime, I would avoid these devices and keep your lights dim in your living space to decrease the amount of light that you're being exposed to keep your melatonin levels high. As well, I would keep devices out of the bedroom, such as your phones and your Kindles and computers. They emit EMFs, which is electromagnetic frequency, which disturbs our sleep. Other recommendations: sleep in complete darkness, use an eye mask if you need to, and that will, again, keep our melatonin levels up, and sleep in a cool room.
Boy, that screen thing is really true. Literally, I've been kept awake if I've been too long on my computer at night.
Yep.
So I've also heard that your bedroom is really supposed to be used for two things, sleep and intimacy. I think I've heard of that.
Yeah, it's true. You don't want to be doing all sorts of things in your bed. You want your body and your mind to associate your bed with sleep, not all sorts of other things.
Okay. So what recommendations then do you have for people who aren't sleeping very well? They've tried all these things and they're not working.
Yeah. So first I would ask the person if they're having problems going to sleep or staying asleep. Going to sleep, this is likely anxiety, worries, tension. While staying asleep is usually a blood sugar problem. So I would recommend if you are having problems falling asleep that you try to get all your anxiety and worries out before bedtime. This could be, you know, talking to a friend or a partner, or it could be journaling about it. You don't want to try to have to analyze these things while you're supposed to be sleeping.
Well, that's a good idea. Something I might add to it is I've kept a little pad of paper by my bed because sometimes I'm afraid I'll forget something.
Oh, yeah.
So that keeps me awake. So if I just turn the light on, jot it down, then I can let go of it because I won't forget and I can fall asleep.
Yeah, that is a great idea. I like it. The other thing I would say is if you're having problems waking during the night, just to make sure you're eating a protein and fat containing snack before bedtime. So maybe some nuts or some cheese, and this can help to stabilize your blood sugar. If you're having problems with sleep, see your doctor and find one that's going to help you figure out the reason for your sleep problems. Not one that's just going to prescribe you a pharmaceutical medication to make you sleep. Not saying that there's anything wrong with that, but we also want to work on addressing the cause as to why you're not sleeping. And I want to emphasize that sleep is so important to our healing, so we need to make it a priority in life.
So it seems like a simple thing, but it's really a really big thing.
It's huge, yeah.
Yay.
Yeah.
So that's our first secret to vitality.
Yep. Get a good amount of sleep.
Yeah. And you're listening to KVSH Peak Health with Lisa and Claire.
Great. So our next topic is diet.
Well, this is a big one.
It is the diet. So many confusing recommendations again. How do we know what to eat?
Well, I can really relate to this one. And I'm thinking that we keep moving in the right direction is our best approach. 1 month we're told we shouldn't eat this. The next month we're told we should eat that. It gets really confusing. I've heard it's like religion and politics, actually. There's a million opinions.
Exactly. I think that we're going to need to have a whole show on nutrition myths.
But I think so. That's a great idea.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so let's start with the basics, though. A whole foods diet is best. So meaning processed, boxed, packaged, manufactured food is really not that good for your body. It has all kinds of chemical additives that are foreign to the body. If you look at a label and you can't read some of the ingredients, it's probably not good for you.
Even if it tastes really good?
Yeah.
Salty, sugary?
Yes, even if it tastes really good. I know it tastes good, but that's because it's made by the food manufacturers to be addictive. We continue to want more and more.
Oh, yeah. There's a book that I read that talks about the bliss point, mm-hmm. where fine minds spend a lot of time trying to figure out where is that specific spot that makes people really like this food and probably want more.
Yeah. Yes. I've heard of that also. So a whole foods diet is one that contains food that hasn't been modified before you eat it. So it means fruits, vegetables, whole grains, such as quinoa, rice, couscous, buckwheat, raw nuts and seeds, eggs, beans, and meat. And I'm not saying that your whole diet has to be whole foods. It would be great if it was, but most of your foods should be whole foods.
Well, you know, I would just add to that that some people may have specific things that they either are sensitive to or have an allergy to. And of course, you'd want to take that into consideration when you were choosing what you were going to eat.
Absolutely. We're going to talk about that too.
Okay. So in general, though, you want to try to make better choices more often, which is my mantra.
Yeah. I like that. So it's clear that a whole foods diet is best. Everybody is different and the types of whole foods that are best for their body. So one diet that works for me may not work for you. For example, I might eat a paleo diet consisting of meat, fruit, vegetables, nuts, and seeds, but you might not feel good on that diet. Maybe you feel better without meat and your body thrives on whole grains and beans.
Right. So whole foods diet.
Mm-hmm.
I get that it should be fresh and not come from a box.
Right.
What else would you say about diet?
I would say that it's all about experimenting with your diet and seeing how you feel. There are so many different types of diets. I'm just going to mention a few of them here. A popular one these days is the gluten-free diet, dairy-free diet. So these are usually helpful for people who have gastrointestinal problems, and we're going to actually talk about that more in another segment. The nightshade-free diet is actually helpful for people with joint pains. And so nightshades are certain vegetables, peppers, potatoes, tomatoes, eggplant, as well as some spices such as paprika, cayenne, and red pepper flakes. There's also anti-inflammatory diet, which can be beneficial for autoimmune conditions or arthritis. It's basically good for anyone, though. We all want to decrease our inflammation. Another popular one is the blood type diet, and that's based on a book by Peter Diadamo. He's a naturopathic doctor. His book is called Blood Type Diet. You can check it out. But his theory is that as we evolved, more blood types evolved, as did the diet. And group O blood type is the oldest blood type. So these people may do better on a diet with more meat and less grains. I'd recommend you check out that book if you're interested.
So that's
and try it out.
Mm-hmm. Excuse me, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
That's okay.
That might be something to talk about specifically sometime, because obviously not everybody's the same blood type.
Right.
And I've heard, there's someone on the island who's done a lot of work with anti-inflammation. So a lot
yes.
of people have done her program.
Mm-hmm.
But I had one question about the nightshades. Do sweet potatoes count as a nightshade?
No, they do not.
Ah, thank you.
Yeah, which is good because they're delicious.
Yeah.
And then the last thing I was just going to say is a diet based on food allergies or sensitivities, which I'd encourage everyone to do an elimination diet to determine your food allergies. Many of you may have already done one with Kathy Abascal, which is great. But if you haven't, I want you to realize that, you know, food allergies may not only result in gastrointestinal problems. They can cause skin issues, joint pains, urinary problems, sinus problems, depression, and anxiety.
Well, obviously we could have a whole show dedicated just to diet as well, and we may in the future.
Yes, I agree. Totally. All right, let's move on to our next topic. So the next topic is water. And so water makes up 60% of our body, and that's a lot of water. Our body needs water for so many basic functions, forming proteins, temperature regulation, enzymatic reactions, transportation of nutrients, and I could go into a whole list of scientific functions of water, but that would be pretty boring.
So the main thing to know is that our bodies really need it.
Right.
And probably we should be drinking more than we are.
Correct. Our society is in a state of chronic dehydration. Many of us, not all of us, of course. But most of us don't drink enough water, or we drink things that actually decrease the amount of water in our body. So coffee is the number one thing. Not to say that coffee is all bad, but if we're drinking more than a cup or two a day, we're likely becoming dehydrated from it.
What about decaf?
Well, it still has a little caffeine in it, but definitely not as much. I don't think I'd count it as part of your water intake. But another note regarding decaffeinated coffee, you want to be careful with this as it's often highly processed with chemicals and solvents to remove the caffeine. If it doesn't say on the package how it's been decaffeinated, then they're likely using solvents such as methylene chloride or benzene.
Ooh. What about tea that has caffeine in it?
Is it dehydrating? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah.
Yes, it is. Not quite as. It doesn't have as much caffeine as coffee does. It's about half, I think. Black tea has more than green tea.
So what should I look for?
As far as the decaffeinated coffee.
Yeah, because that's all I drink.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And not very often.
It should say that it's water decaffeinated or decaffeinated using supercritical carbon dioxide.
Very interesting.
Yeah. So
people are like, let me get this straight. So they're maybe, if they think less caffeine is a good thing, they're helping themselves by drinking decaffeinated coffee, and they're keeping their water content higher, but they may be drinking a toxic solvent at the same time.
Unfortunately.
Oh, no.
Yes. So moving on, one thing I would say that a lot of symptoms can be caused by dehydration.
Okay, I'll bite. What symptoms?
Yeah, so fatigue, weakness, headache, nausea, nosebleeds, wow, irritability, constipation, and dry skin, just to name a few. A lot of times people are suffering from one of these symptoms. They go to the doctor when it could just be solved by drinking more water.
Wow, you could save money that way.
It's true.
So if you have any of those symptoms, start out by just making sure you're not dehydrated.
Correct. Drink some water.
Okay. And how else could I know if I was dehydrated?
Well, the first thing I want to say is that thirst is not really an accurate indicator of hydration. By the time you're thirsty, you're dehydrated. So a better way to assess this is how often you urinate and the color of your urine. It should be pale to light yellow. You could, if you're on the internet, you could Google, am I hydrated? Urine color chart. And check out the urine color chart as to which colors indicate whether you are hydrated.
Okay, so I'm not sure if I should think this is interesting or not. But I had heard, it should be clear. And I've also heard it should be, slightly colored, that was okay. Because you'll hear someone say, oh, you shouldn't drink too much water. That could be bad.
That's true.
So how much water should you be drinking? Should I be drinking?
As far as the urine color, I would say, lightly colored. And it doesn't have to be clear. No.
Thank you.
So, and then as far as how much you should be drinking, it depends on each person, how much activity you do, the humidity and the temperature of the environment you're in, your diet. But in general, half of your body weight in ounces throughout the day is how much most of us will benefit from. Now, if you're exercising and sweating or you're drinking coffee, then you need to drink extra. And keep in mind, you want to check with your doctor on this, as too much water in some people can be harmful, like people with kidney disease.
Okay, so check with your doctor to make sure that drinking too much water isn't going to harm.
Right, that you don't have a condition that too much water harmful.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, one thing I might want to add is that some people don't necessarily like a lot of water. So as a suggestion, it's important to know, how do you like your water? Like, I like hot water with lemon. Mm. I don't like ice water.
Mm-hmm.
So if you like it in a certain container or at a certain temperature, or even certain times of the day, those can all influence how much you're willing to drink.
Right, totally. But I do want to add, we don't want to drink in plastic. It has what we call xenoestrogens and phthalates, which are hard on our liver. And actually, the xenoestrogens, they act like hormones. They mimic hormones in our body.
So even all those plastic bottles?
Yeah,
resting
not good.
In landfills. Mm-mm. Or the grocery store waiting for us to buy them?
No, we don't.
Really?
No. Glass is the best.
So you've heard people say they don't like tap water, though, or they think that's bad.
It can be, depending on your water source. I would recommend that you get a water filter to filter out toxins and heavy metals and things.
So when you get a water filter, I've looked at them before.
Mm-hmm.
They filter for different things. So
yes.
You're saying heavy metals and toxins.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Reverse osmosis is probably the best. It is a little bit pricey, but would be the best option if you can afford it.
Well, getting sick's kind of pricey too.
It's true. That's true. Good point, Claire. One more thing I want to mention about water is to drink your water away from meals, because we don't want to dilute our digestive juices, our stomach acid, and all of that stuff. So you can drink some water with your meal, but you don't want to be drinking your 16-ounce glass of water with your meal.
So what about the timing? A lot of people will say, well, I don't want to drink because then I'll be up all night going to the bathroom and I won't be getting my great sleep.
That's true. That's true. So maybe decrease your water intake, you know, after 6 p.m.
Yeah. Okay.
Good point, Claire. All right. So we're going to move on to the next topic, which is movement. Movement is essential to good health, especially aerobic exercise. And our society has become pretty sedentary, and it shows in our health. Their metabolic syndrome is on the rise. And if, for those of you who don't know, metabolic syndrome is a combination of diabetes, high blood lipids, and high blood pressure.
And obesity also?
Correct. That's included. It's a certain increased waist circumference. I can't remember the numbers exactly off the top of my head, but a certain amount of inches. So, obviously, movement exercise is helpful for reducing metabolic syndrome and everything that goes with it. But it's also helpful for prevention of stroke and heart attack, depression and anxiety.
You know, it's amazing that these somewhat, they're no secrets really, but simple things have such a huge influence on overall health and the kinds of things that people walk around with every day even.
Totally. Yeah. The power of exercise is underestimated, in my opinion. It can improve our health in so many ways. I want to say another interesting fact about aerobic exercise is that it's helpful for increasing the size of our mitochondria.
Ah, the mitochondria.
Yeah.
And they are?
They are part of each and every one of our cells. And in the mitochondria is what's produced is called ATP. This is the energy of our cells. And so when we do aerobic exercise, we can increase the size of our mitochondria and thus our energy production.
Okay, so people who are tired, they don't feel like they can exercise because they're tired. But what you're saying is it may actually help them because it will increase the size of their mitochondria.
That's right. Yep.
Super cool.
Yeah. So, you know, obviously starting slow if you are tired, you know, not going for a, you know, super long, intense run or anything like that, but starting slowly and building up.
So, okay. I've heard lots of opinions on this. How much do you think we need to move and exercise, and should it be broken down like by cardiovascular strength training and flexibility?
Yeah. Well, I want to talk about aerobic exercise first. So for basic good health, a good number is 150 minutes per week if you're exercising at a moderate intensity. If you're exercising at a vigorous intensity, you can decrease the amount of time, would be 75 minutes. But if you're interested in having excellent health, more is better here, 300 minutes per week at a moderate intensity or 150 at a vigorous intensity.
So as a personal trainer, the first thing I usually ask people is, what are you willing to do? When they ask me, what should I do? I say, well, what are you willing? Because that makes a big difference just to get them started exercising. So,
I like it.
How do you know what the difference between moderate and vigorous?
So basically it's a calculation based on your age. So you take 220 and you subtract your age. And then you take 50 to 70% of that number for moderate intensity and 70 to 85% for vigorous intensity. So I'm 41 years old. I would take 220 minus 41 is 179. And then 50 to 70% of that is 90 to 125 for moderate intensity. So that's my heart rate. And then 70 to 85, which is vigorous intensity, would be 125 to 152. So we're talking about the heart rate.
So one simple way, I think, is just if you can take your pulse for 10 seconds and multiply by 6.
Correct. Yeah, you can do it.
Sometimes
10 seconds.
It's hard to do that if you're running. But
yeah, well, you probably have to stop. Or you can get a heart rate monitor that will check your heart rate as you're exercising. And so I want to just say, again, if you're just starting out at an exercise program, you don't want to start at a vigorous level. You start at a moderate level. And check with your doctor before starting any exercise program. So, Claire, you mentioned the stretching. You're a personal trainer, right?
Correct. Yeah.
Right. So you mentioned stretching, and you were going to tell us about a study of yoga?
Oh, yeah. I think stretching is sort of the orphan child of exercise. Mm-hmm. People are all hep to do strength training, lift weights, and cardiovascular, but stretching gives you a full range of motion that the human body should have, and it stretches the muscles and the fascia underneath, and it is good for injury prevention. I actually teach yoga as well, and recently saw an article in the New York Times, which I think came from the Huffington Post, about yoga for the prevention of osteoporosis.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing. Of course, it's not likely for pharmaceutical companies to fund a study like that, but some doctors got together and they followed several hundred women over 10 years who all, 80% I think, had osteoporosis to start with. And at the end of the 10 years, they had maybe a quarter of them, maybe 200 of them out of 800, were still following doing the certain yoga poses. And none of their osteoporosis had increased, and in some cases it had decreased.
That's awesome.
Which is pretty amazing because you don't hear that you can decrease it very often. So
right.
Very cool.
Good.
Stretching. I make people stretch if I'm working with them on strength training. I make them stretch after they've done particular exercises just so they get the benefit of both by the end of the workout.
Great. Cool. So aerobic exercise, stretching, and also strength training. It's a good
thing.
Right.
All three children.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Well, so we've covered four different things now, secrets to vitality. We said sleep, water, diet. Oh, maybe we covered more. No, sleep, diet,
water, and movement.
Great.
Or activity.
Right.
Exercise.
Yes. So I think we're going to wrap it up today, and we'll continue next time with some more Secrets to Vitality.
Ooh, I can hardly wait.
Yes.
It's really been fun, Lisa.
Yes, it has been fun.
Yes.
So this is Peak Health Radio Show, where we're dedicated to educating and inspiring you, our listeners, to take back control of your health so that you can have the freedom to live the life that you desire.
And you're listening to KBSH, Peak Health. Lisa and Claire. We're signing off for now. And thanks for listening. This is our maiden voyage, so to speak. And we'll look forward to connecting with you next time.